Welcome to another edition of the NBA Outlet, presented by OTGBasketball.com. Be sure to follow OTG on Twitter, at OTGBasketball. Also, hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, my good friend, Harris Richard. What's up, Harris?
What's going on, Nick? You know, my favorite time of the week, getting to talk hoops with you. And you know, amidst all the stuff going on in New York right now, with all this mellow talk, there's a lot of uncertainty. We know the Knicks struggle, so we'll get into this.
Yeah, we'll get into that. We got another meeting tonight between OKC and Golden State. We'll talk a little bit about that too. It looks like the Clippers really are cursed because it's a big time injury. But let's start with the Melo talk. So obviously the Knicks have kind of been let down. I think they've lost something like 14 of their last 18 games or something along the lines of that. They've really struggled. At one point it looked like they were starting to find a rhythm, but now that hasn't happened. And, you know, people are talking trading Carmelo Anthony. There's been reports that he'll only go to Cleveland or the Clippers. He does have a no-trade clause. And he had a meeting today with Phil Jackson or yesterday where he said New York. So what do you think of this whole situation? What's the best move for the Knicks?
Well, I saw some proposed trades. I mean, you know, you see all the rumors out there. You don't know what to believe. But Ian Bagley and, you know, you look at some of the Knicks beat reporters and that article did come out. But this has just been a mess of a situation. Ever since the Rose disappearance, you know, him, the disappearing act, excuse me, from Derrick Rose, it's kind of been a nosedive from then. And they've lost some games in really, like, ugly fashion, as bad as you could lose games, buzzer beaters, you know, missed six-footers by Melo. So that doesn't help the situation at all. We know the inconsistency of the franchise over the last few years. We know the criticism, I think, that Phil Jackson has recently come across because of him. I think he kind of I don't know if he's ever really been that public of a figure or a guy that comes to the forefront of his criticism and hasn't really spoken much to the media. To answer your initial question, I think it might be time. But that, like you said, Cavs and Clippers will be the only two teams. I just don't think from the start. I mean, like we've talked about the playoff appearances early in Melo's Knicks tenure. And we've talked about, you know, their ability to not be able to get over to the top. If it's going to turn around, if his next Knicks tenure is going to be a success, it's going to take a lot of firepower from the back end because this thing looks like it could be spiraling out of control, Nick.
Yeah. One thing I heard, you know, if he does want to stay in New York, Wally Szczerbiak said this, he thinks that Carmelo has to play at the four. Mm. What do you think about this? Do you think that's the right move for the Knicks? Yeah. This kind of caused some issues at the five because they have all that money to Joakim Noah and can Kristaps play the five right now in the NBA?
Yeah, you know what? People have said this, that's going to create a lot of mismatch problems for him on the offensive end to be able to drag some of those fours out there and go by them. But it doesn't make it easier for him defensively. But I think the Knicks' best lineup would be with him at the four and Kristaps at the five and stretch those and get those big, get some of those bigs away from the basket for Kristaps. And, you know, he's for consecutive seasons for Kristaps, we've seen him play really well early and then kind of hit a little wall. I'll expect him to pick it up a little bit too. I think there's a lot of pressure on him also to kind of right this ship and get this thing turned around. I don't think anybody saw them at 18 and 24. I know we didn't after 42 games. We didn't expect them to be 18 and 24. So I think, you know, Rose will have some opportunity too here going forward. And I think, you know, they mixed up the lineups the other night. Hornacek went with some of the European guys. You know, Kaminsky has got to start. And so I think they'll mix it up a little bit, but I agree. I don't know how you feel, but I think Melo at the four and Porzingis at the five would be their best look.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could kind of say, like, they're not really playing defense right now, so it shouldn't hurt them that much if they switch Kristaps to the five. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, rebounding is still a big issue for this team, and it'll be a bigger issue if they do start Kristaps at the five and Melo at the four. So, I mean, but they don't really have much to lose. And, if you know, Melo's staying in New York and he's going to stay for that contract and you can't get him to waive that no-trade clause, you need to try to make that situation work. And I think for him as a player, playing the four is probably the best. Like you mentioned, he can kind of go past some of the bigger fours, stretch out the floor. Defensively, he can pretty much handle it. You know, he's a strong guy, and there's not a ton of dominant fours and not a ton of physical dominant fours. So I feel like he can definitely handle it.
He hears all the talk. I mean, there's a lot of scrutiny And there's been a lot of negative, word around his name since he's been here. And he's deserved some of that criticism. But I think that comes with being the guy in a city like this. And especially when the team's not successful, they're going to look to you. And I think he understands that at this point. There's been some negative press in some player, some coaching departures and players departures. So it hasn't just been the fact that they haven't played well. It's been all the negativity surrounding, everybody else as well. I think
it's been messy.
What's that?
It's been messy.
Yeah, and it comes down to him, but it's been everywhere. It's almost like this dark cloud that the franchise can't get away from, and he's gonna hit the pressure, and all that negativity is gonna come to him. But I think, and Begley came out and said this, that he doesn't deserve all of that. We obviously know what a great player he is, and I think there's just a lot of frustration from Knick fans and wanting more and wanting his tenure to be more, and it just hasn't been that. But
do you think not waiving the trade, no trade clause, is a good thing? Like him wanting to stay in New York and start what he, finish what he started, or do you think he should be more open and just be like, if things haven't really worked out here, maybe I should just, go to another team and try something different?
Well, we know about him in the free agency a couple of years ago about the Chicago thing, right? And that a lot of people criticizing, there's going to be criticism everywhere. Also, like a lot of people saying, him going to Chicago, him not going to Chicago was a loser's move, but then him, because he could have had a better chance to win there. But then people say, oh, we left New York, so he won, the ship.
That was a lose-lose situation for
him. Yeah, I just said, we have to understand, he's the one, this has been well documented. He's not one of my favorite players to watch. I like a specific type of guy, but and people have questioned his, his heart, soul, and his heart and things of that nature. But I think for him at this point, when they had that season, his most successful season with the Knicks, when they won 54 games, he had told people once he got to the Knicks, this is a 2 or 3 year process, and that was his third season. That was only his second full season, but his third season with the Knicks, and actually first full, because they had the lockout, if you remember, his second year.
Yep, yep.
So that was his first full year in New York, and they were terrific. And, they had some veteran leadership. And I think the way that roster was built was beneficial to him, because they had some shooters around him, and they haven't been able to emulate that success. JR and Shump go, and they kind of, with Melo in his prime, they break the whole thing down. And they start really over. And then there was some frustration with the Porzingis pick you heard out of his camp, because he was thinking, well, this guy's not going to be ready for a couple years. We're going to win 17 games again. And then there was, one thing in the green and in the positive for Phil since he has taken over is Porzingis. So then that looked like it could take off. Then there was excitement for the Rose and Noah pickups. But this season hasn't exactly worked out. And you just look at them, the amount, like I've mentioned a couple of times, the amount of coaches, the amount of circulation in players. There have been like 8, 10, 12, 15 different rosters. So it's just been a model. This has been a model of inconsistency. And whether it's his fault or not, I guess from the outside, we could only watch what we see on the floor, and we don't know what's going on inside the locker room. But, the best player usually gets blamed when something doesn't go right. And there's been a lot of wrong. And, if they're going to turn this thing around, you would think that it would have happened earlier in his career. But he does have a couple years left. I don't know where they would go from here to kind of turn, because you just feel like the momentum of Porzingis would tilt it in his favor as the guy. I just don't know where they go from here.
Yeah, I mean, I think he just kind of has to take on that secondary role, in the sense that, it's going to transition to Porzingis' team, no longer Melo's team. And then from there, if he wants to stay, I think he needs to understand that situation and, how it works. But enough talk about the Knicks, a team that is kind of sloppy all over the news, and talk about a team that's never in the news, doesn't get enough love in the media or enough hate, and that's the Spurs. The Spurs are quietly 32-9. Winners seven of their last 10. So this team is quietly having an amazing season, and you know they're not really getting talked about much at all.
Yeah, that's exactly the way they like it. And you know, for San Antonio, Kawhi Leonard has emerged as the player we thought he would be. And you know, Tony Parker still at his age has, you know, you flip on a Spurs game and he's still playing 26 minutes a night, and they get some good play from Patty Mills also. You know, Manu's role has decreased a little bit, but the brunt of the load is on Aldridge and Leonard, and the Spurs keep on trucking. I mean, you talk about the success they've had over the last, you know, 15, 20 years, to the consistency, the model of consistency they've been in the NBA, but it's just amazing how with Duncan gone, and he didn't have a tremendous role, but I just thought from a leadership role and what he meant to that team, I didn't think they would be this good. I thought they'd be good. I just know if they'd be this good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think early on they had some interesting losses and some struggles, yeah. And now they're kind of finding that rhythm and they're not getting talked about. It's just like you said, just how they like it. Yeah. And the pieces are starting to fit some. They're getting some good play, obviously Kawhi. Dwayne Dedman has been a nice pickup for them. You know, big man from Orlando. He's coming and played pretty good. You know, so, and they kind of use everybody on the team. Like you said, Tony Parker's still having some significant minutes. And it's so crazy. You know, it's just like being a Spurs fan must be kind of amazing in a sense.
Yeah.
You always know your team is going to come in, year out, no bullshit. And they're going to come to play and they're going to come to win.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's the model franchise in the league. And you make the comparisons to the Patriots all the time. And, you know, yep. Having that stability there at the coach, you know, you realize how important coaching is at the pro level. I've always
in got front office, in the front office,
yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah. Buford and those guys, yeah. But I've always gotten in arguments with my dad about how important coaching is, you know, because people will knock Phil Jackson and they'll knock, you know, other coaches that may have had great talent. But I think what separates guys like Belichick and Popovich is you could clearly see they created the culture there.
Exactly. There's a certain demeanor.
You have to have the talent, of course, but at the professional level, talent's going to win you ball games. But I think what makes it sustainable and consistent is the coaching at this level. And we see it at the highest level. They had an interesting loss the other day, Nick, to Phoenix. They lost to the Suns by 3 in Phoenix, and Booker had like 40. And you just usually don't see that kind of individual.
Well, Booker's been cooking lately, so yeah. That might be I think he dropped 30 on another team as well. So
anytime you have an individual performance against San Antonio like that, that could obviously do wonders for your confidence. Because me and you always joke about how we don't like to take guys in fantasy against the Spurs because they do a good job of containing the other team's best player. I'd be willing to bet. I mean, we played a team in college like this. Oswego was like the – was a great at, you know, they ran the table in a conference. They had like a 30-game conference winning streak when I was there. And they just did a good job of neutralizing me and another offensive option we had. It's just Spur-like to be able to contain and usually hold the best player under average. And they've been doing that for years.
It's funny, and you made the Patriots comparison, and that's something that Bill Belichick likes to do. Whatever you do the best, he's going to make sure you can't do it, and he's going to make you beat you another way. So, right.
And sometimes they might have a theory of, you know, we'll let this guy get. We'll get, let him go. You know, I think they understand.
Sometimes it does.
Yeah, they'll let this guy get his, and then no one else is going to get. I don't know. It's a day by day thing, but or game by game basis. But just to see that number, that was surprising. They usually don't see that against them, and I think before that, you know, usually that you don't see it. And before that, I think the high against them was like 32 or something like that. Yeah. But It's just rare. To Cousins had a big night, I think, early in the year. But like you said, they're cooking. They've actually lost a few games in January, but they haven't really missed a beat without Duncan. That was the one thing I wanted to see. And, you know, Tim was not the Tim Duncan from 5 years ago, but I just, like I mentioned before, a locker room thing, and I think everything else he brought to the table, it was just going to be interesting to see if there was any drop-off there.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, there's some in the fact, you know, that this guy's been here for so long and just his presence, his leadership is going to be missed. But they're starting to find a rhythm. I ask you, obviously, the important question. At this time, do they still pose any type of threat to the Warriors, or is it still, you know, pretty easy pick for the Warriors in a 7-game series?
I don't know. I don't think they really. I think they pose a threat, obviously, and we'll get into the Chris Paul thing in a minute and talk about one of the teams that I thought was who could pose a big threat even more than the Rockets. But I think for the Spurs, and when you always have Pop and you have a, and you have Leonard, who defensively could can't hope to contain Golden State and what they've been able to do on the offensive end, but I can't see them beating them. But definitely pose a threat. I think out of just respect to this, what the Spurs is about, and Pop, and you have to think that you know, you go in there with nothing to lose. And they have they even matched up in the postseason the last few years? I think the only time these two teams have matched up in the playoffs is before we knew who the Warriors were. It was during the coming out party in 12-13. So they haven't matched up in the playoffs the last couple of years, and it would be interesting to see. We thought we were that collision course last year, and the Thunder got in the way of that. Yeah. And the year before, they got the Rockets in the conference final because I think the Clippers upset them, or I want to say the Clippers upset them early. So it would be interesting to watch that series, obviously, but I don't know if they have enough guys to slow them down. I think they play so well as a unit, but I don't know if they'd be able to do enough on the defensive end.
I feel like a lot of things that they do defensively work against, you know, 99% of the teams in the league, 99% of the players. Mm-hmm. But against the Warriors, some of those things just won't work because they're so talented. And yeah, they have these incredible shooters on that team. Yeah. I think the Spurs could probably win two games in that series. Yeah. But 6-7 would be tough to see. I mean, and talking about, you mentioned it, now the Clippers, they're going to be without Chris Paul for 6 to 8 weeks. And Blake Griffin's still out. I heard he's probably still about a week or two away from practicing. So how big a drop are the Clippers going to take right now?
Blake Griffin better hurry up and get back, man, because we know we've seen what they could do without Blake and with CP there. And we've seen this team and Jordan fill in, and then Redick will fill in, and then Crawford could come off the bench. We've seen what the team can do without Blake Griffin. But when you take away Chris Paul – now, he's not the MVP of the team, but is there a team that needs a guy more, a team that's in consideration to make a push more than if you take away Chris Paul from the Clippers? I mean, maybe you can make the argument about the Thunder, but does anybody think the Thunder can win a championship this year? Any team that has a threat, Chris Paul is not the MVP of the league this year, but he might be the most valuable player to his individual team.
Exactly. I mean, he does a lot for them. He has the ball in his hands a lot. He doesn't turn it over a lot. He sets his players up for success. It's going to be really interesting to see how they handle this and how many games they can win while Blake is out. Because when Blake comes back, that's going to give him a boost. And, you know, if Blake comes back healthy, he can kind of steady the ship for a while because he's a very good player. Yes. And Paul, it looks like, will probably be about 2 months. So he'll be back for the playoffs. It'll just be about seeding. Obviously, you don't want to drop too far down. Where do you right now? They're currently the fourth seed at 29-14. Where do you think they fall? You know,
seventh.
Seventh. That's OKC at 25-18 right now. I could see seventh. Yeah, I mean, it'd be pretty hard to drop into eighth, just because they have such a big gap on. It's a 10-game lead.
So I keep thinking like there's like a little bit of a. What am I trying to say? A revolving door, but there's almost like the circulate and the trade-off of the eighth. They're playing a patty cake, hot potato with the eighth seed, and it's the Nuggets, it's the Blazers, it's the Kings, and I'm interested to see what, you know, which one of those three, Pelicans,
you can't even really say for a fact that the Timberwolves aren't in it or the Mavericks.
The Lakers are probably out of it, but you know what? It's just interesting because someone mentioned today, I think it was Bahamani Jones. Is that his name on? Highly questionable. He mentioned the possibility of the Clippers missing the postseason. Now, I don't think they're in danger of that would mean 10 games right now.
In the past, I think it would have happened in different Western conferences. Yeah. There's been really competitive 10 teams in there.
Yeah.
But this year, they kind of caught a break where the eight seed is really bad. So they should be safe. I mean, it would take a real meltdown.
We'll catch a break, and then – you know what I could actually see happening? I don't know how you feel about this, but I can see, like, the Clippers, like, falling to the eight and then giving the Warriors, like, hell in the first round.
Yeah, that'd be kind of, like, awesome, to be quite honest.
Yeah, like, because, I don't know, I just have this feeling that, like, the Warriors, I'm telling you right now, say whatever you want about the Clippers in the playoffs, but for some reason, they match up well against the Warriors. Like, someone texted me last year that the Thunder would pose the threat to the Warriors, and I said, well, even though they were up 3-1, but that Clipper team, I don't know what it is. I mean, when it was maybe because it was Paul negating some of what Steph Curry does and not letting him run rampant, although he had some big games against him. The Clipper team was always a team that, as someone who likes to see the Warriors successful, was someone that you fear. I don't know. I don't know how you feel about it. I just feel like they, for some reason, whatever it is, they might have. And that was a legit rivalry for a while.
Well, that's the thing, too, is there's extra tension. Anytime there's, like, tension and energy like that in a game, I think it kind of can impact the outcome and kind of balance out the talent a little bit. Obviously, the Warriors are still the more talented team, but the Clippers have a lot of talent on that team, too. You know, Chris Paul, J.J. Redick, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, Jamal Crawford. So, I mean,
like you spoke about it, what happened last year in the playoffs with the injuries, and then they ended up not being able to get – wait, we were denied – I thought that we were going to get Clippers Warriors 2 years in a row, and we should. We really think about this for a second. They matched up in 2014. The Clippers beat the Warriors, and in 2015, all they had to do was hold on to that 3-1 lead, and
they lost. They couldn't
hold a 16-point lead in the fourth quarter at home. Last year, all they had to do was stay healthy, and they would have played them in the second round. And they would have probably, you know, we assume they'd beat Portland. So right now you're right. There is a unfortunate cloud, a little bit kind of like the Knicks of the East right now, and although they've had a little bit more success, a little bit of a dark cloud. And you hate to see that. Especially
just like the injuries keep mounting up. It seems like every year Blake's hurt or Chris Paul's hurt or at some point in the season. And it's just like it sucks for the Clippers fans too. And obviously it sucks this year because Chris Paul's a free agent, I think, at the end of the year, and Blake has the option. So – I mean, this is make or break type of season for them. I think Blake probably stays for sure, but it looks like Chris Paul could be on his way out if things don't go well.
Yeah, you're going to see a very different landscape in the NBA next season. I think there could be a lot of pieces moving. And, you know, we talked about two teams just today, whether it's the Knicks could be moving their guys, the Clippers could be moving their pieces. And I'm sure they're not the only two teams that would be thinking about retooling. And, you know, for me, it's one of those situations where, you know, it's now the Clippers might struggle to win 50 games. And that's unfortunate for that organization. And, you know, we mentioned it earlier in our previous podcast how this could be a make or break year for them. And it's unfortunate that they'll have to go 2 months without their most valuable player.
Yeah. And like you said, I think even not just in the offseason, but at the trade deadline this year, with the way the cap is and other things changing, I think you could see a lot of moves on the deadline too. Which would be exciting for us.
And obviously. I know you love the – and we to remind all of even our new listeners that Nick's favorite time of the year is that trade deadline.
Yeah, no, I love playing GM. I think, you know, free agency, that's one thing I love about the NBA is, like, you can see big-time players get moved, and it doesn't always happen in other sports.
I want to get your prediction. We got the doubleheader on ESPN tonight, but, you know, the first game is Milwaukee-Houston, which is a good basketball game, but we have round two of what is, to me, must-see television anytime Durant plays the Thunder again. When he goes back to OKC, it's going to be a little bit more emotional. This one's in Golden State. You expect more of the same tonight?
I feel like this one's going to be calmed down compared to the first one. Just because the Warriors are kind of – they just squashed the Cavs. You know, they're starting to catch their rhythm.
Squashed like that.
Yeah, they did. Okay. And the Thunder, you know – they're kind of worried about winning games. So I think there's a little bit less focus on the relationship between KD and OKC and KD and Westbrook. That it's more about the game. Obviously, OKC is going to have a hard time winning. But I think it's less emotional this time around.
I think the Thunder can win this basketball game. I know I might sound crazy in saying this, but I think you're going to get one of – and Westbrook's been fantastic all year long. But I think you're going to get one of his better games tonight. I think, you know, the Warriors are coming off the high of – they really wanted to give it to the Cavs the other night. You could see it.
You could see it from the tip.
Yeah, they really wanted to play because they're tired of hearing all the BS and what happened on Christmas and they you know, LeBron not talking about not being a rivalry and then the flop thing that happened. So I think they're coming off that high, and I think they could be got tonight. I think they could obviously still win the basketball game, but don't be surprised if the Thunder play really, really well tonight and steal this one. And I think obviously Westbrook, the triple double and all the big numbers, but I think you see more. Obviously, possessed Westbrook is what we've seen all year, but I think this is going to be much more competitive. It's not a bold statement to say this is much more competitive than game one, because the first time these two teams went at it was over when Enes Kanter opened his mouth on the bench. So this is one of those situations where I think we're going to go down to the wire, and hopefully for the NBA it's a good one.
I think Westbrook would probably have to put up like 40, 45 plus for them to win this game, but I don't think it's impossible. So, I mean, I kind of hope that he does. It would be kind of cool.
Yeah, a lot of games tonight too. So, a nice little Wednesday in the NBA season. We're past that halfway point. So, and then the trade talk is coming up. So, the All-Star break is around the corner. So, exciting time of the year. And, again, all the OTG writers, the staff that comes on, everybody retweeting us and listening. We appreciate all that support. Thanks for having me, Nick.
Yeah, no problem, Harris. All the love and support is great. Let us know what you think. If there's a topic you want us to talk about, let us know on Twitter. And we'll talk to you guys next week.